Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It's 2:30 p.m. That is Pacific Standard. No, it isn't. It is Central Time. And today is November 16th. I thought we'd kick off with Rivian. It's up another almost $19 in here today. So it IPO'd a little more than a week ago. And that was at $75. So it's almost put on an extra $100 in value in the course of a very short period of time. And the company's pre-revenue, so it's the largest company ever to a command valuation, which is sitting around $150 billion. And that's before they even produce one vehicle. Now, of course, they have the promise that they're going to get this, or well, they have an order from Amazon and that they'll be producing trucks for Amazon. But the reality is they haven't produced any yet. So we're in an interesting environment where these kinds of companies can command these extraordinarily high valuations on promises. And what is particularly interesting is that if, and I guess I am going to be a little bit selective and look at, for example, Lucid Group. So Lucid Group's also surging right now, and it was up another $10 in here today. And it has a market cap of $90 billion. And, of course, they do have a vehicle in the market, but they haven't sold very many of them. And the share is up today because they said they're selling more of them than they thought they would. But it's going to be a long way before they get to mass production. So Rivian is being rewarded for the promise of future production. Lucid is being rewarded for the promise of more future production, but with a lower valuation. And then, of course, we have companies like Ford, which is also surging higher and has accelerated over the course of the last couple of months, and, of course, is a major producer, and it then is rewarded with an even smaller valuation. So it's at $80 billion. So this is almost the exact opposite of what one might anticipate, because historically, at least, the automotive sector has been relatively low margin. And yes, they do have segments of the automotive sector that tend to be higher margin, like trucks and SUVs, but it's never going to approach the kind of margins that you get from the technology sector or the software sector, for example. So is it really possible that companies like Rivian or Lucid are ever going to approach the kind of valuations that are being attached to them? Then, of course, we have Tesla, which has pulled back because Elon Musk has been selling, and it is beginning to at least offer some evidence that it is stabilizing around the $1,000 level. When then we think about what's going on in China, well, they've made a whole load of commitments ahead of the COP26 negotiations in Glasgow. And one of those is that they're going to try and electrify more of the automotive fleet. So XPeng is starting to appreciate, and it's pushed on to a new recovery high. And NIO is another one of the electric company startups, and it's also starting to steady, at least from the region of the trend mean. But what I find interesting is that the Chinext index, which is the more speculative shares, is starting to appreciate again. So it's bouncing from the region of the trend mean. Even though it was in negative territory today, this remains a reasonably consistent trend overall. So there's increasing potential that we're coming towards the end of this period of tightening in China, and that financial conditions are going to be a bit looser overall, and that should help to support speculative activity everywhere, because capital is both global and mobile. And we're starting to see at least just the beginning of some evidence that the renminbi can weaken. So that's a downside key reversal today. if we get follow through tomorrow, well, it would confirm a peak for the renminbi of at least near-term significance. And they have an incentive to devalue their currency. Of course, it seems right now that everybody wants to devalue their currency. And the euro in particular is accelerating lower. So it's been down for 5 consecutive days. And this is a meaningful pullback from the 120 area. The pound hasn't been quite as dynamic on the downside, but it is still holding a sequence of lower rally highs, even though we have a short-term oversold condition in right now. And the yen has got a clear pattern of underperformance relative to the dollar as well. So the USA might not be rushing to raise rates, and I don't think that they're going to raise rates by very much when they do start. And but considering the fact that Japan and Europe aren't going to raise rates at all, well, that is helping to support the outlook for the dollar in at least the near term. So when we look at what's going on in terms of the 5-year yield, which is the most relevant in terms of the USA's or the US government's obligations, it's up to 1.25%, and the interest rate swap for 2 years in 2 years is up to about 1.5%. And both of these are still in upward trends overall. So the bond market is willing to at least begin to price in the potential that we're going to have higher interest rates 2 years out, or maybe even 3 or 4 years out, but that it's going to be slow going to get there. And in order to get there, we would need to have outsized economic growth. And in the meantime, I think that it's increasingly likely we're going to have inflationary pressures moderating in 2022, because ultimately the supply shortages of chips will moderate, and we're already starting to see some of that happening in the memory sector. But the Philadelphia Semiconductors Index continues to march higher because of the continued performance of companies like AMD and NVIDIA. AMD is probably going to do better because they have supply of graphics cards and they'll be selling those. So the share is now accelerating higher, and having already done spectacularly well over the course of the last few years, this is obviously an acceleration. Nothing has happened to question the cyclicality of the chip sector. We've already started to see that Samsung is rolling over, or I think perhaps more correctly, Samsung has rolled over, and Taiwan Semiconductor is beginning to roll over. So that's at least beginning to sow the seeds of the potential that some of these accelerated trends won't do quite as well in 2022. But of course, people want to own them. So they may easily rally into the end of the year because people will be writing end-of-year reports, and they'd love to be able to say that they've owned AMD and Tesla for all that time. The best performing sectors, or the best performing shares on the S&P this year, are both oil companies. And the oil price was steadier in here today, but not in an especially dynamic manner. But it is continuing to hold the $80 level. Ultimately, we're going to start to see additional new supply, particularly outside of OPEC, beginning to come to market because this higher price will encourage new supply. But there has been a lagged effect in getting that supply to market because companies are worried about the ESG and environmental lobbies curtailing their ability to bring the supply to market. And of course, the European carbon emissions price continues to trend higher. So that's imposing a significant additional cost on producing any form of carbon in Europe. Then the natural gas price in Europe is continuing to pop on the upside. This looks like at least near-term support, but I think perhaps much more important than that is that it's confirming support well above the upper side of the long-term base formation. So we're in a different environment now. Prior to 2021, prices had always encountered resistance around 80, and now it looks increasingly unlikely that prices might ever fall back below that level. They're at 240 right now, and this has been a meaningful rebound because Germany has delayed the permissioning of the Nord Stream 2 pipeline. Of course, it's extremely unlikely that they're going to deny permissioning of it. They agreed to building the thing in the first place a decade ago, so the chances of them just kissing away the potential for additional new supply is extraordinarily unlikely. But they probably do want to feign independence. But the reality is that Europe is extraordinarily dependent on Russian natural gas. So ultimately, we are going to see that pipeline permissioned and a greater position for Russia in the European gas sector. European markets continue to remain quite steady, and they are benefiting from the weakness of the currency. But I think what's particularly important is that the index isn't really going anywhere in a just an equal currency term. So the significant appreciation that we've seen, for example, in the FTSE over the course of the last couple of weeks in nominal terms has been reversed in US dollar terms. So even though we've seen a number of these indices breaking on the upside, it's all about the devaluation of the currencies. On the other hand, if China is turning the corner and the government there is beginning to ease off on some of the strictures on the property sector, then that should be beneficial for the emerging markets. And the MSCI Emerging Markets Index has been going down just about all year, and it's now right in the region of the upper side of the very long-term range. So this is a potential area of support, and of course China represents about 30% of the index. And when then we think about the MSCI Emerging Markets ex-China ETF, well, it has outperformed for most of this year. Was in negative territory today, but still in a ranging environment overall. And I think that there is considerable potential for emerging markets to outperform over the course of 2022, and not least because that's where growth is. So the Indonesian market is hovering here in the region of its all-time peak in nominal terms. Then in Vietnam, the stock market has also been resurgent and is trading out to new all-time highs. I also think that Mexico is going to be one of the big beneficiaries of the reorientation of the global supply chain over coming years, and the index is also consolidating in the region of the all-time peaks. As we look at what infrastructure is going to get built over the coming years, it should be beneficial for Brazil. But the Brazilian market is trending downwards, and it was down another 1800 points in here today and coming back down to test the psychological 100,000 level. And a good part of the reason for that is because of domestic inflation. And interest rates have risen considerably and are likely to rise further in order to try and contain it. And the Brazilian real has appreciated over 3 weeks, but is now beginning to encounter resistance in the region of the trend mean, as shown inversely here versus the dollar. And in order to really reignite interest in Brazil, then the currency is going to have to be more convincing on the upside. And it's not beyond the bounds of possibility that that might occur. But we're probably going to have to see iron ore prices bottom in a more convincing fashion, and nickel also moving to a position of stronger performance. But I think the big linchpin for investment in renewable infrastructure is copper. And the price was down 5 in here today, so still pausing in between 400 and 450. And it's going to have to pop well above that 450 level and sustain it in order to confirm that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. We have had some pressure coming through in commodities today, and some of that has certainly weighed on gold. And we have a downside key reversal on gold in here today. Now, this is in no way similar to the size of the downward dynamics that we had at previous peaks. Nonetheless, it fulfills the conditions for a downside key, and follow-through on the downside tomorrow would cap this short-term rally. Now, I think it's particularly important to look at the medium-term trend because we still have this sequence of lower rally highs. So, this is a natural area where shorts might begin to try and pressure some stops, and they were successful in here today. And if we're still in a benign environment where it's likely that gold will surprise on the upside, then we should start to find support somewhere around the $1,800 area. And it's a natural area where some support should start to come back in. But I think we are likely to have at least a pause and consolidation coming through in gold, just based upon the chart pattern as we have it right now. And gold shares also pulled back in a somewhat dynamic manner, and it's a downside key reversal as well, although very small. And the key to the key is size. So significant downside follow-through tomorrow would be required to confirm a peak of more than very short-term significance. So we may get some additional messing around before gold can regroup and push on to new recovery highs. And it may even offer an additional bite at the cherry for anyone who missed the rebound over the course of the last couple of weeks. The other, I think, technical deterioration that we're seeing right now is in Bitcoin. And the price is down $4,000. So we had the downside key reversal last week. We didn't have a lot of follow-through. We're definitely getting the follow-through today. We're now right down in the region of the lower side of the range that's been forming for the last month. And the lows are around 58,000, which is why I've said that 57,000 is the key area, because usually the stops are just below where the most recent low is. So if the price pulls back on a closing basis below 57,000, that's a failed upside break. But perhaps more important than that, it would also be a larger reaction overall. So we'd be looking at a pullback in excess of about 15,000. Now, we haven't had, or I guess we have had pullbacks in that order, for example, in September. But they didn't hold for very long. So then I think the next area of potential support would be around the region of the upper side of the range, which would be around 53,000. Of course, if it pulls back to 53,000, it's a significantly larger pullback overall. So that would be an inconsistency. But it will look like a failed upside break above the peak from March and April, and it would represent significant technical deterioration. And this is part of the reason why I've been reluctant to buy back into Bitcoin. I just wasn't anticipating that we're going to have the same kind of consistent trend that we had up into the peak in March, April. So I think we're in a more dangerous environment. And then we can look at a high beta version of Bitcoin, and Ethereum has very clearly now broken that short-term sequence of higher reaction lows in evidence since the end of September. And it's coming back in to test this 4,000 level, which of course is the upper side of the 6-month range. So it would certainly be an ideal scenario for Ethereum to find support around the 4,000 level. If it fails here, well, then it could quite easily come back to test the region of the trend mean, which would be an additional $1,000 pullback from the current level. So we're certainly in a more risky environment for cryptocurrencies. And of course, we've had incredible speculation in the peripheries of the crypto market, particularly in NFTs. So certainly there's been a lot of interest and a lot of money flowing around. And of course, then we've had an explosion in futures trading. But futures trading can be a double-edged sword. And certainly the size of the pullbacks we've seen today would suggest that there's profit-taking going on. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.